I know it can be stressful wondering about prenatals and whether or not they have all the right ingredients. Well, Ritual takes all the guesswork out of prenatals. Their essential prenatal builds key nutrient levels to support a healthy pregnancy. It includes methylated folate and nature identical choline to support baby's neural tube development. There's omega-3 DHA for brain and early vision development support. And there's vitamin D to support fetal bone health. And as someone who looks at research, I love that Ritual's Essential Prenatal is backed by science. I also love that all lots are third-party tested for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. You deserve to know exactly what you're putting into your body, especially when it comes to prenatal multivitamins. And with Ritual's dedication to traceable science and sourcing, you always will. See for yourself with 25% off your first month at ritual.com/Dr. Nicole. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women Prenatal to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/Dr. Nicole for 25% off. In this episode, I'm chatting with Rachel Summerstein about her traumatic experience having a C-section without adequate anesthesia and the book that that experience led her to write. Welcome to the All About Pregnancy and Birth podcast. If you're having a baby in the hospital, you are giving birth in a system that too often takes away power from women over what happens in their own bodies. I'm Dr. Nicole Calloway Rankins, a practicing board-certified OBGYN who's had the privilege of helping well over 1,000 babies into this world. I've been a doctor for over 20 years, and I'm here to help you take back your power, advocate for yourself, and have the beautiful pregnancy and birth that you deserve. This podcast is for educational purposes only, and it's not a substitute for medical advice. Check out the full disclaimer at drnicolerankins.com/disclaimer. Now let's get to it. Hello there. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is episode number 271. Whether it is your first time listening or you have been here before, I am so glad you're spending some time with me today. Rachel Summerstein is the author of Invisible Labor, The Untold Story of the Cesarean Section. It's just been published by Echo. She's an associate professor of journalism at SUNY New Paltz, and her reporting has also appeared in the Washington Post, Boston Globe, and The Guardian, among other publications. She's also been featured on NPR's Fresh Air. Rachel holds a PhD from Syracuse University's Newhouse School, and she lives in New York's Hudson Valley with her family. Invisible Labor is her first book, and she was led to write the book after her experience having an unplanned C-section without adequate anesthesia. In the book, she weaves her personal narrative and investigative journalism with medical, social, and cultural history to reveal the surprising evolution of the C-section from its days being practiced on enslaved and, quote, unfit women, to the ways modern medical technology promotes the C-section's overuse. She uncovers current-day failures of our medical system and shows how pregnant people's pain and agency is often disregarded by physicians who, motivated by fear of litigation or a hospital's commitment to efficiency, make consequential decisions on behalf of their patients. We have a great conversation about her experience with the C-section, how she realized that she had birth trauma and PTSD after that, how she worked through that trauma when she got pregnant again, how she approached things differently because of her first experience, and how things unfolded differently with her second pregnancy and birth experience. She shares things that most people don't know about C-section births that she wishes more people knew. We chat about some evidence-based solutions to help bring down the number of medically unnecessary C-sections. And we end with why she is hopeful that we can make birth better, safer, and more joyful for everyone. You're going to love this conversation. Now, before we get into the conversation, just a quick reminder that I will be doing my free live birth plan class, Make a Birth Plan the Right Way. That is coming up soon. Grab your spot in this class at drnicolerankins.com/birth plan. It's a great opportunity for you to learn how to make a birth plan that actually works to help you have the birth that you want, because just filling out those forms online and bringing that to the hospital is not going to cut it. I teach you a great way inside the class. And at the end of the class, there is a Q&A where I will answer all of your questions about pregnancy and birth. So again, come join me. You can register and grab your seat in the next live class at drnicolerankins.com/birth plan. Okay, let's get into the conversation with Rachel. Thank you so much, Rachel, for agreeing to come onto the podcast. I'm really excited to have you share your story and then how you came to write your book.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Yes. So why don't you start off by telling us a bit about yourself and your work and your family, if you'd like.
Sure. So I am an associate professor of journalism. So I teach undergraduate students how to do journalism and then also how to think about journalism. And I'm also a writer and the author of Invisible Labor, the Untold Story of the Cesarean Section. Mm-hmm. And I am a mom of two children who are now 8 and 4.
Okay. All right. So we have to hear about your birth experience, because that your first birth experience in particular, because I know that contributed a lot to what made you decide to write the book. So can you tell us about what happened with your first pregnancy and your first birth?
Sure. So my first pregnancy was basically uneventful. I'm fortunate that I was in good health going into it. It was pretty textbook, although for me it was textbook, but you know, the experience of being pregnant the first time is like, doesn't feel textbook at all. Yes. You know? I was really tired. I had a lot of nausea, you know, really common things that were new to me. And right. Then I went into labor right around my due date, and the entire pregnancy, which was textbook and uneventful, I expected to have a vaginal birth. And mm-hmm. people around me seemed to think the same thing, to the point that I did not even read the sections of the pregnancy books about C-section because I was not going to have one. And mm-hmm. in retrospect, that was extremely naive and also reflects, at the time, I think my own internal stigmas about C-sections, which are not true, that, you know, some people mm-hmm. have. And as a result, when I ended up having an unplanned C-section, that was all completely surprising to me. And I think even if I had read the stuff, it still obviously would have been difficult. It was not a good birth experience. And being unprepared for the mere possibility of surgical birth was mm-hmm. one big part of my pregnancy that I think is very, very common for first-time moms. Unless you have something going on that would lead you to expect you might need a section.
Sure.
So that's one part of it. And then the second part, the traumatic part, is that I'd been in labor. It was the middle of the night. My daughter was having heart rate decelerations. Mm-hmm. And the midwife who was taking care of me was like, I think it's time for a section. And so we went to the OR. And when the obstetrician started the operation, I said, I could feel that. And he said, you feel pressure. And I said, I could feel that. And he continued, and the operation was extremely painful. And I write about that in the book. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing about this story that I've come to understand as I've spoken to other moms, regardless of what their experience was like, is that although it's shocking to hear that this happened, the not shocking part is that I wasn't listened to. I think that experience is extremely common, unfortunately. Yeah. It's far more common for women of color than for women who are white. And I'll just say, for people listening, I have white skin. And so I think that if you can connect to my story from that perspective mm-hmm. and think about different times when you weren't listened to, then it can be something where you're like, oh, I actually could see how that could happen. Mm-hmm. And them not being prepared for a C-section at all, too, I think is extremely, extremely common.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So did you end up going under general anesthesia during your C-section?
Yes. So thank you for asking about that. So once mm-hmm. my baby was born, which I don't remember because I think I was in shock, and also mm-hmm. the anesthesiologist, I'm sure, gave me different medications, sure. right, mm-hmm. at the time. He put me under general, and then I woke up in recovery, but I was like, I don't think people realized I was awake. I heard the doula and midwife talking about me. And, you know, I think one thing about that that is also too common is that sometimes people feel really disregarded in their births, right? Like they're just sort of a body and not a full person with feelings and fears. And
And
I do want to say, like, this was a very traumatizing experience for me and for my providers. My providers were really shaken by this, from the nurses to the OB to the anesthesiologist to the midwife and to the doula too, I'm sure. And I, you know, as a person who talks to a lot of moms with birth trauma, I think that's something we sometimes don't remember, right? That, like, of course it's the worst for the birthing person. Absolutely.
Right.
And to be witness to something traumatizing is still traumatizing for providers. I mean, I'm telling you this, and I'm sure that you have your own thoughts and experiences and ways of coping. And but I think it's something that patients don't always think about, right? That that's important too.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. It is very traumatizing. I mean, as I've shared, as we've talked before, and I've shared in my podcast, my first C-section, I also had inadequate anesthesia, and I could feel it when they started, and definitely traumatized. It definitely changed the way that I thought about how to take care of women when they say they have pain during a C-section, for sure. Because there is a lot of, oh, it's pressure. No, you're like, we're almost insistent. It's pressure. And it's like, this person is screaming, like, stop it. So it can be traumatizing when you can see that someone is in a lot of pain. I would say an area where this is a little bit of an aside, where we don't talk about it a lot, is when someone has a stillbirth. Obviously, it's very traumatizing for the family, but like, I can still hear wails of people when you have to tell them that they had a stillbirth. So yes, thank you for acknowledging that. We do also experience trauma, and we don't have a lot of things to help cope with it, or like things in place in a like systemized way to help cope with it. And actually neither do birthing people. So how did you, as someone who experienced trauma, how did you realize that, yes, this is birth trauma and maybe even PTSD? How did you come to that realization?
So it took me a really long time, because I am one of these people who is like, put your head down and march through the snowstorm. And I would say, and I think this is really not unusual, I think a lot of people cope with trauma by like just working harder.
Right.
And so I did that for a while. And then,
I mean, you were even like weeks after your birth, the story where you went to a work event and you had to take the baby. And I mean, that was like very shortly after you gave birth, and it was like, you were just marching through.
Yeah. I didn't really have much of a choice in terms of like having to get back to my job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's another reason among the many why we need paid leave, right? Is like, birth can go any number of ways. Mm-hmm. And I was really not ready to be out in public as a professional with my baby, or even without my baby. And so even as I was getting back to work, so to speak, I was not able to bond with my daughter the way that I would have imagined that I would have been able to bond with her. Mm-hmm. And so things were showing up in my life that I didn't recognize as birth trauma. And because I was doing such a quote unquote good job at my job, and I was really on top of it as a parent, too much so, right? Like, I was like way hypervigilant, which can sometimes fly under the radar as like, you know, you're like, wow, like, you're really, you got it together, you know, hyper-competent when it was really hyper-vigilance, I think. You know, it wasn't until my daughter was about 2.5 that I realized I felt really stuck in my life. I like, it's like, do I want another baby? Do I want to keep working in my job? Do I want to move? Like, I didn't even know what I wanted.
Right.
And I went to therapy, talk therapy, for those reasons. And then the birth came up.
Okay.
And then another thing that came up, kind of like, oh, and by the way, when I went in to have a colonoscopy, because my father had colon cancer in his 30s, he survived, it's like kind of amazing.
Right.
But, you know, I had to do these early screenings.
Sure.
When I was waiting in the, like, the surgical bay,
right,
I had a panic attack.
Mm.
And that made me also realize, like, I can't just pretend this didn't happen.
Right.
It's coming back to assert itself. And that's when I started talk therapy and ultimately EMDR, which is a technique where you basically reprocess traumatic memories using eye movement and reflection and talking with the provider. That when my therapist first suggested it, I was like, what is this?
Right.
I didn't, you know, is this real?
Right,
you know,
right, right.
There was really not that much evidence about its use in birth trauma. Mm-hmm. There was some evidence about its success for combat veterans. And it was really helpful for me.
Okay.
I mean, it really helped me a lot.
Okay. So did you see someone who specialized in birth trauma, or they just happened to specialize in trauma period? Or how did you come to find someone who was able to help you?
That's a really great question. So the talk therapist I met is not a birth trauma specialist and is also an excellent therapist.
Okay.
And I'll also say is culturally concordant. So like I'm Jewish and that's a big part of my identity. Mm-hmm. She's also Jewish. It's not like we're sitting there like talking about Judaism,
right.
but like can understand, you know, culturally concordant care, right? Can understand where you're coming from.
Right.
So that was really important. And I'm fortunate I could find her.
Okay.
And there are culturally concordant Jewish therapists, right? Which is an issue also for moms of color. They're not enough therapists of color, period.
Yeah.
Right. It's a harsh, huge problem. Mm-hmm. And then she is the kind of person who recognizes her own limitations and said, you know what? I think EMDR would be great for you. I can't offer that. It's not my training. Here's some suggestions of people. And then I found someone like that. So, you know, I would say for people who are struggling with birth trauma, knowing that different therapists are specialists in different modalities, just like you would not go to a dermatologist if you had like, I don't know, an orthopedic problem, right? You know, might be like, okay, if this is something that's really in my body, I need to go to a therapist who deals with like more body-based, embodied kinds of treatment.
My girls are 14 and 16, and back in the day when they were born, it was not easy to share photos and videos with loved ones. But now you have a fantastic option available, the Family Album app. The Family Album app was created in 2015 and has operated over the long term to give parents a secure and easy way to share photos and videos with loved ones. It's a totally secure personal haven for your family's memories. I love that it's private with no unwanted eyes. Now let me share some of the great features that make Family Album a go-to app. First off, the app automatically sorts photos and videos by month, allowing you to swipe back in time and see how your child has grown. No more scrolling through endless feeds or searching through folders. Another cool feature of the Family Album app that I love is that you can order 11 free photo prints every month to be delivered to your home starting in August. It's really nice to have some tangible pictures to hold onto or share to document each month of your baby's life. Plus, the Family Album app has unlimited storage and it is totally free. Yes, you heard that right. No more worrying about running out of space when you're just trying to relive those heartwarming moments. So if you're still trying to use other messaging apps for your kids' photos, it is time to level up your family photo game with a free photo sharing app. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, it's all one word, download the app, and start creating a legacy of love one photo at a time. Now, at some point you had to decide that whether or not you wanted to try to have another baby. So what made you decide, okay, yes, I am going to get pregnant again? And then how did you approach things to try to have a different experience?
So I was not sure for a long time if I wanted another baby and if the fear was getting in the way. And then I realized really through talk therapy, I really did want another baby.
Okay.
And I write about this in the book a little bit, like it, once I realized that, that then it wasn't like, okay, let's do it. <You know? laughs> because I was so filled with fear, really. But my husband actually met a midwife who lives near us, and I didn't know this term at the time, but so-called trauma-informed care she offers. And I think what was really helpful was that I got to meet her for the first time walking down the street. Like I didn't meet her for the first time in a medical office.
Right.
So I was calmer because I get really scared when I go to the doctor now, or the midwife. And, you know, I read about this in the book too. Like one thing that I didn't see at the time, I called that luck, and it was luck to some degree, but it was also like the social determinants of health, right? I live in a town where there's a midwife who lives nearby. That's not an accident. That's not luck, right? That's the result of the zip code I was born into and things like this.
Right. Right.
And she is the kind of person who doesn't feel defensive, I think, when a patient brings in trauma to the room, which, you know, sometimes can manifest in all kinds of ways that maybe don't reflect best on your character, right? Like, maybe you're like, I don't know, kind of twitchy about it, right? Or maybe you're like really like defensive about what, like you're recommending that, or just, you know, I don't trust you, or maybe you're snappish, or, you know, these things that like you're kind of, as a person with birth trauma or any kind of medical trauma you're bringing into the room, you're not in charge of that. Like, you don't sit down and be like, I'm going to be kind of a jerk to my provider. You know, it just sort of happens, you know? And she was really able to be present with me, with my fear. And I also saw her for almost every visit, except for like when I had to see a maternal fetal medicine specialist, you know, because I was over 35. And I also saw the OB who works with her too. She's in the, I should say, she's like, she attends births in a hospital. She's part of a practice of OBs and midwives. And what she does, particularly for patients who have trauma, is she works with the schedulers to try to keep seeing, you know, make sure she sees you almost, if you want that, right? Like, to see you almost every time, because, you know, when you get bounced around, and I don't think this is just for people with trauma, you get bounced around, then you're like always explaining what's going on. Can't develop the relationship.
Yeah, that's true. And then did you decide, or what was your thought process about trying for another, trying for a vaginal birth or having another C-section? I don't want to put words into your mouth. So
it was a really, really hard decision. And I think that for moms who've had a C-section, no matter how it went, I really think the question of whether to schedule a repeat section or try for a VBAC is one of the hardest things. And I think it's really underappreciated. First, you have to think about what you feel comfortable with. Then it's like, what's even open to you? Like, not everybody has the option of trying for a VBAC, because the latest data says 1 out of 5 hospitals doesn't even offer them. So where do you live, right? Like, it's like, so maybe that's a symbolic option and not a real one. And if it's a symbolic option, are you going to travel, right? Like, and like, and then there's the inner feelings, right? Like, I was like, what if something goes wrong if I try for a VBAC and I have a, you know, the fear is uterine rupture, right? It's very, very uncommon. I knew I was having my baby in a hospital so that there would be people there who could intervene immediately. But it was really, really hard decision. And I ultimately felt that I wanted to give it a whirl, try. And I was I was supported in that, not only by my providers, but, you know, with my husband. Like, I was like, what happens if this goes badly? Let's say I have a uterine rupture and like my baby has, you know, oxygen deprivation and brain damage, God forbid. What would my husband, will he blame me for being selfish, you know, for wanting to try this? It was a really, it was really, really hard. And one thing that happened at this, during this, is COVID started. And I live in New York State, and the governor at the time made a rule that you had to be alone during your birth, right? That got changed.
Because we realized like that was a bit excessive.
And I should say, like, listen, it was such a crazy time. And so there was so much fear and there wasn't enough protective, personal protective equipment, Like, I understand why that decision came down. And for me, I was like, I just cannot imagine my husband dropping me off at the hospital and me walking into a repeat section by myself. Like, I just don't think I could withstand that. So ultimately, I felt it was safer for me to try for a VBAC. And I already had one daughter who needed me. And that felt like the right decision. But it was hard.
Okay.
And the whole okay. pregnancy, I told myself, you can change your mind, and you can. Right. My providers were like, you can change your mind. And that was so important to feel like I'm not locked in.
Sure.
You know, it's okay. And maybe you'll change your mind if like things in your pregnancy change, right? Like if it turns out that you develop preeclampsia or you develop gestational diabetes or whatever. I think being open was important for my sanity and also for reality, mm-hmm. because sometimes things change out of our control.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. The only predictable thing about pregnancy and birth is that it's unpredictable.
Exactly. Right?
So, like, things can happen at any point in time. You know, we don't have as much control as we like to think we
Absolutely.
Do, especially as medical professionals. Yeah. So, So then how was your second birth experience then?
So, you know, you would think it would have been like, oh my God, it's COVID. And, you know, this was June 2020.
So that was right when things were getting ramped up.
Exactly. I'm very lucky that it wasn't March 2020, you know, when we didn't, oh my gosh, before the lockdown, you know, it was just such a mess, right? Like people were in a lot of danger. So the birth was wonderful. I mean, I went into prodromal labor a few days before my due date, which I didn't know what that was at the time, but it's like when the contractions are happening, they feel real, but you're not really progressing that much. Mm-hmm. And my in-laws had come to watch my daughter. My mom couldn't because she'd been injured. And, you know, my husband and I went to the hospital. It was a Saturday night. I had texted with my midwife and we got there and my contractions totally stopped. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't think that this baby's ready to get born.
Right.
And my midwife was like, let's get you hooked up to a monitor and see how he's doing. And we did. And she was like, you know, he doesn't seem to be doing so well. Like, let's just sort of hang out and see what happens. And I remember feeling like so upset because I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to end up, I'm not going to even have a chance to labor. Like, this is too early, you know?
Right.
And then, I stayed on the monitor and he kind of woke up, right? It seemed like maybe he was just sleeping or whatever.
Right.
And I was like, can I go home? Which is probably the most daring question I think I've ever asked. And my midwife was like, you can go home. And I mean, of course you can always go home, but like, what's her medical opinion, right? Is this safe?
Right.
And so we did. And then a couple days later I went into labor and I just was like, this is it. This is, and I had an appointment with her that morning and I was already at a 4 or 6 or something. I was pretty dilated.
Okay.
And I also had a headache and kind of the beginning signs of preeclampsia. And she said, you know, go straight to the hospital. This isn't like the other day, like with those numbers, like you're not going home. And I was like, oh, I know that. Right. Like this is, I don't want, I can read the situation enough. Right. Like,
right.
And I labored there. I was really supported by the nurses and the midwife on call. And the OB on call was, the OB who worked closely with my midwife, who I had a nice relationship with. Uh-huh. And then my midwife surprised me and came in after her shift in the office, to be there for the birth. And got to pushing and they had turned off the epidural and I could feel that my son wasn't lined up right. Like, and I should say my daughter hadn't been lined up right either. Like her head was kind of cocked and I had back labor with both. So there's something anatomically, like that's how babies are set up for me, I think. Right. Like,
right.
And then the midwife was like, would you be okay are you okay if I try to turn his head? You know, my water hadn't broken yet. And so there was sort of like room to do that kind of thing. And I said, okay. And she tried and she couldn't do it. And then she asked the OB on call. And at first he was like, oh, she's a VBAC, you know, should we?
Right.
And she said to him, everybody's doing great. And I have a feeling about this. And he said, okay. And he came in and moved my son's head. And then I pushed him out pretty quickly.
Okay.
It was, you know, it was amazing is that they trust each other. you know, the midwife and the OB, they've worked together for probably almost 20 years. They've both have incredible clinical skills.
Right.
And I trusted them.
Right.
And I felt so proud and so excited. And it was also scary still, right? Like it's, you know, I feel like sometimes the, like vaginal birth and cesarean birth get pitted against each other. Like it's better, you know? And it's like, for me, I felt obviously it was, the C-section was traumatizing and scary for reasons because of the pain that I was feeling, but pushing a baby out is also scary. You're like, am I going to rip in half? You know, like birth is just this tremendous.
Yes. Yeah. You know, like, it's a lot.
And my husband caught him and I was completely, completely depleted after that birth. Like I was like, I remember asking that would be like, am I okay? You know, like I was so, and he was like, we'll do labs and stuff like this, but I think you're just shot. And I think he's right. Like I put it all into that.
Right. And almost like you've been holding your breath for 9 months or however many, you know, and like, yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And how is this going to go? What's going to happen?
Yeah. It's you speak to an important point that, you know, there's, some things are not in your control in terms of who you have as the doctor or the midwife. But one of the things that I think we've lost as OBs is like, we should be able to do more than either catch a baby that's falling out or cut a baby out. Yeah. Like we should have those skills to turn a baby or, you know, turn a breech baby or do forceps or whatever to help facilitate a birth. So I'm glad that you were able to have someone with some clinical expertise and who works together to help you have a vaginal birth. Do you feel like the recovery was easier physically?
It was. I will not lie. I had a tear. It was a minor tear, probably, you know, first degree. But it was still minor. But I still felt like, you know, pushing the stroller was still hard. Like at week seven,
right?
But you know, after my C-section, my legs were swollen for like so many weeks, and I had a hard time just like getting around. You know, it's like, you try to open the dishwasher, it's hard to sit up. It's, you know, and, you know, I was, like I said, I mean, like saying like I was shot, that's how it felt. Like I was I was so physically depleted and I really needed my strength back. And I needed to rest a lot, but I was able to, you know, pick up my baby and not feel like, ah, that's so tender that, you know, or trying to breastfeed. Yeah. So the recovery was like no comparison. And I think that too, though, as a second time mom, I was like, I didn't push myself the way I had the first time. I had these expectations. I would get back to things so quickly. And partly I had to because of, you know, having to go back to work sooner.
Right.
And also I just learned like, you'll get there. You know, this is just a blip in your life this time of recovery and resting is the most important thing that you can do. And the world will be out there when you're ready for it.
Absolutely. It'll all still be there.
Exactly.
Yes. So then what made you decide to, after your experience of your C-section, decide to write a book about C-section? Because not everybody has an experience and then decides like, okay, I'm going to write a book about it and kind of dive deep into things about C-section. And really it's about birth in general. Like there's a lot about the history of birth and the medicalization of birth and things like that. So what led you to that?
So I'm a writer. So partly like that's my thing. And partly I realized that writing about what my experience would help me cope, you know, in addition to doing therapy. But then also I was like, the more I learned about C-sections as a way of trying to understand my experience, the more that I saw that they are a great way to look at our culture. Like the fact that they have become so common, one out of three births in basically like 50 years, you know, why and how and who are they happening to disproportionately? And like, why are we doing them more and more every year when there's widespread agreement that we should back that up a little bit and that people are working to it, mm-hmm. right? This is like, this is not a controversial position to be taken, you know? It's almost like, I think about like climate change, like there's widespread agreement. Humans have caused it. People are working really hard to change that. Why can't we seem to do it, to do something? So those were some of the reasons. And then also I think my experience helped me almost like look under the veil at like things like women's pain and the use of technology and social determinants of health, like things that were there all along and that I didn't see. And so I saw like there's more here than just my experience, right, to explore in a book.
Sure.
And when I had my baby, I saw no stories about C-sections. Mm-hmm. I'm like, where are the stories about getting better from a C-section? Right. Where are the stories about birth trauma even? Like, the stuff I saw was really like, you hop in a taxi cab, like your baby comes out, it's like, you know, people scream and then it's totally calm. Right. And then you go home, right? And I'm like, not only does that not describe my experience, it actually doesn't describe virtually anybody's experience who I talk to. Right. And I felt very alone. Right. And so I wanted to write something that I would have needed at the time to feel less alone.
Gotcha.
And I wanted to expand our representations of birth.
Yeah. And I know one thing you also mentioned is that you actually thought about that. I thought was an interesting point. You actually thought about, you know, should you pursue legal action or anything for what happened? So tell us about what happened when you explored that.
So I at first kind of didn't even think about it. And then 2 years after my daughter's birth was the beginning of Me Too. And this sort of change in the cultural air of like believe women. And I also was coming to the end of the statute of limitations for when I could bring a lawsuit. And that coincided with when I was realizing like I have PTSD, like this is not over. So I talked to a few lawyers and, you know, they were like, they ranged from dismissive, like what's the big deal? It's like 5 minutes, you know, to more compassionate in explaining, like, because I hadn't had physical damage and my daughter didn't either, for which I'm grateful, right? Like that I wouldn't really have a case. And I know in retrospect, I probably could have looked further for representation. And I also know that if I had, it probably would have ended in a non-disclosure agreement. I would have gotten a settlement.
Right.
And like, what would that have done? Like, I didn't want money.
Sure.
You know, I mean, everybody wants money, right? Like money, you know, that's how you pay your bills, obviously, right? Like,
right.
But like money would not have restored what I had lost.
Right.
You know, and like for and it's also like, I didn't exactly even want to like punish anybody, right? Like it was like this was a series of errors. It wasn't like, my OB is a terrible person or the anesthesiologist is a terrible person and they should pay. And so, you know, in writing a book, I felt I would come closer to achieving the kind of, I guess, speaking out that I and witnessing and that I really wanted in a way that is so much more satisfying. Like even honestly, like having this conversation or talking with other moms or other providers is so much richer than like, first of all, you go through hell, you know, talking about this thing in a very adversarial place, right?
Right.
Here's a check. Right. Now close your mouth. I mean, what would that do for anybody?
In my family, we prioritize sitting down and having dinner together every single night. But finding the time to plan meals, do the shopping, and cook from scratch can feel overwhelming. That is where Gobble comes in. Gobble is a meal kit delivery service where each week you can choose from their rotating menu of over 18 gourmet meals. You can mix and match from classic recipes, lean and clean recipes, and vegetarian options, and Gobble will deliver them right to your door. We recently had a Gobble meal of Baja-style fish tacos with green goddess cabbage slaw and spiced black beans. Hear me when I say it was delicious. And that's because Gobble menus are designed by professional chefs. You'll experience a huge range of global flavors and fun gourmet ingredients that make you feel like a pro chef without making a single trip to the store. The meal was super easy to come together because most of their meals only take about 20 minutes. And did I mention how good the chocolate chip cookies were for dessert? See what a difference Gobble will make for your household. Right now, they're offering my listeners a fantastic limited time deal. Get $120 off across four boxes, plus free shipping and free cookies. Go to gobble.com/Dr. Nicole. That's GOBBLE.com/Dr. Nicole today. This offer is not available on their home site, so don't miss out. So in the course of writing the book, what are two or three things that you learned about C-sections that most people do not know and you think they should know?
That's a great question. So one thing I think that's important to keep in mind is that they're not easy and that that a C-section involves cutting or parting way of seven sections of tissue. Mm-hmm. And that as a result, you know, even though you think like, okay, I didn't push the baby out of my vagina, I'm not going to have like issues with incontinence or whatever. First of all, you've had like this tremendous, I guess better, best word is like trauma to all of these different tissues mm-hmm. that are part of your pelvic floor. Right.
Right.
And you were pregnant for however many months leading up to it, yep. which also affects your pelvic floor. Yep. So I wish I had done pelvic floor physical therapy after that first section. Uh-huh. The message I got was like, I don't need it because I'd had a vaginal birth. So one, that's a really important thing. And all the occupational and physical therapists I spoke with for this project were like, you really, first of all, everybody needs it, right? If you've been right. pregnant, you can benefit from it.
Right.
And even if you had a C-section, that doesn't mean like, oh, you've been spared
right.
or whatever.
Exactly. Exactly.
And these issues can come back later in life. I thought this was so interesting as back pain or like you can't hold in your pee. Mm-hmm. As, you know, and these are things like as we get older, you might be like, oh, I'm just getting older, you know?
Right.
And it's like, well, actually it could be because of your C-section, then you never restored yep. the tissue.
Yeah.
So that's one thing. And then I think a second thing is, you know, I said in the beginning of our conversation, I thought I would have a vaginal birth and I didn't want a C-section. But the reasons I didn't want a C-section were not the good reasons to want to avoid one, right? I had this like messed up stigma about C-sections. Mm-hmm. So if they said something about your character mm-hmm. and like has nothing to do with your character right. as a mother. Right. So one thing to know about them is that they can really shape future pregnancies in terms of issues with the placenta, in terms of future secondary infertility or miscarriage. And that with, you know, taken with that, taken together, that can shape how many children you ultimately end up having. Mm-hmm. I didn't think I wanted to have like a very large family, but and I write about this too, like, I think I would have had maybe another child if it would have been possible. Right? All of this is like conjecture, right?
Right.
You know,
right.
you'd say like, I would have. And it's like, right. let's see what would have happened.
Right.
And for me, that was like the trauma. I waited longer than I think I would have if I had not had a traumatic birth. But, you know, talking to other moms for this book, like sometimes, and also talking to researchers, it can be harder to conceive again after a C-section. And if you have then a pregnancy that's higher risk because of a placenta problem, mm-hmm. you know, suddenly you have issues that wouldn't have come into play if you hadn't had that first section.
Sure.
So I think like, and the third thing that goes along with all of that, I think, is that we have to respect it more. We don't respect C-sections in this culture, I don't think, like both in terms of how much they affect the mom physically, emotionally, and also like it can shape your life. Mm-hmm. It can shape your reproductive life. And I think providers actually understand that, right? I'm talking about the overall public culture.
Gotcha.
Like I was, you know, looking at different resources, researching my book. And sometimes it's like the way C-section is described is like, you just like lie back and let everybody else do the work. And it's like,
It's more to it than that. Yes.
It's not a pedicure. Yes. You know what I mean? It's not a massage. Right. You know, we should really respect it and respect what it can mean for the future of your family planning.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And then what are some solutions to help bring down the C-section rate that is definitely too high?
So I really loved what you mentioned earlier about clinical skills that OBs can develop and study. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, you've written about how you have done training in mm-hmm. attending vaginal breech birth, which mm-hmm. makes not only potentially increases people's options for birth, but also is like, to my mind, like a safety, incredible safety bonus. Or like, what happens if you show up at the hospital and right. there's like a foot coming right. out, right? As, you know, you really hope your provider has done that kind of training,
yes.
right? And like recently,
yeah,
right? Not just as like a theory, you know, right. yeah, in medical school, right?
Right, right.
So I think that, and I know that these kinds of skills, like about how to turn a baby's head, how to attend a vaginal breech birth, right? How to help a mother move during labor mm-hmm. so that the baby is better positioned, which can be done even if you have an epidural, right? Mm-hmm. Like I had an epidural for both of my births. One I was moved into different positions, one I wasn't. Mm-hmm. That really makes a difference mm-hmm. For whether a person would have a potentially avoidable section right. versus, you know, a necessary one. A really interesting solution coming out of Penn actually is standardizing induction protocols. So this one researcher standardized how, in a clinical trial, how right. providers would induce moms. And which is so interesting. And what she found is that when this same protocol was followed, the C-section rate for Black moms went down from 34 to 25%, stayed the same for white moms, and outcomes for babies were also better.
Okay.
And no worse outcomes reported for anybody.
Sure.
And so that kind of standardization mm-hmm. gets rid of implicit bias. Mm-hmm. And what an incredible outcome, like a 9% right. reduction.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It
without
definitely.
Again, like any sacrificing safety
sure.
right for anybody.
Sure.
And then another one that I think is really promising is group prenatal care. Mm-hmm. So there are some really exciting initiatives where, you know, you see your provider independently for like checking your blood pressure and, you know, talking over anything that's coming up clinically. But then you meet with a group of other moms who are right where you are in terms of, you know, their pregnancies. And you spend about 2 hours talking with a provider who then is answering questions that would come up in any session. And you get the community component. And the provider can really go deeper on, in terms of education, you know, right. on things that there might not be time for otherwise. And, you know, this is something that's available in different parts of the country. And the outcomes, again, are great. In some cases, it's lowered C-section rates, higher satisfaction among the moms, I think lower preterm birth. Like the outcomes are good on many different kinds of metrics.
Yeah.
And that's sort of my takeaway about this whole area is like bringing down the C-section rate will make birth better mm-hmm. for everybody mm-hmm. because in order to do so, we're going to make birth safer for everybody. We'll right. make birth outcomes more equitable. Well, you know, it's also about, you know, making sure there are more midwives who are right. available to right. meet the demand and the need across the country, but particularly among moms of color, right? Like that's like the biggest gap mm-hmm. is between what's available and what moms of color want. So that is going to also make birth better, right? Then you're like, I want to see this kind of provider. I want to see this provider in my community. Even if we don't talk about C-sections, that is a way to make birth a better experience.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So then why are you hopeful that we can make birth better?
There are so many brilliant and hardworking providers and researchers and doulas and people who aren't even in medicine who are trying to do things like to incentivize quality maternal care. And I find that incredibly inspiring. And I think that the way news works is that the bad stories get attention. Mm-hmm. There's a terrible saying that I don't think is used that often anymore in newsrooms, but the saying is, if it bleeds, it leads, right? Like conflict,
right?
Yep. Murder. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's foremost in our minds is like these terrible stories. Mm-hmm. And there are many terrible stories. I'm not trying to diminish them. Right. And just the number of people who are putting their heads toward improving birth is almost overwhelming. And they're not making headlines the way that the bad stuff is making headlines. Yeah. So that's why I'm super hopeful. And I think also like the things are, I think the other reason is that the conversation is changing to take the sad things that maybe once felt shameful out of the dark and into the light. So like you had mentioned earlier, like stillbirth or like effects of birth trauma on providers, birth trauma period, right? All of miscarriage even, right? Like this is coming out. And I think that once, you know, if something bad happens to you and you feel like it's shameful and you can't talk about it, that increases the pain. Definitely. And it increases the isolation. The fact that the conversation around birth is changing, I think, is also going to improve birth because, well, no, you know, you're not alone. And it's also like if you have a miscarriage or you have a C-section or you have a stillbirth, like you're not, it's not your fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So then as we wrap up and I ask guests all these questions, what has been the most frustrating part of sharing this work and your book being out there?
That's such a great question. I think that sometimes when people hear about what happened to me, they might think that is so scary. That will never happen to me. I can't hear anything about this anymore. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, as I said, earlier in our conversation, what happened to me is terrible. What happened to you is also terrible, right? It should not happen. Mm-hmm. But it can also point the ways to how some elements of it are too common and do need to change. And if we don't look at that, we can't change it.
Right. Yeah. You can't fix what you don't acknowledge. So
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So then on the flip side, what has been the most rewarding part of this work and sharing your book?
I think hearing from people who feel like the book resonates with them or who feel seen, talking with providers, you know, this fall I'm going to be doing grand rounds at different medical schools. That is like the greatest honor, you know, to feel that we can be part of, we meaning like journalists, patients, moms, providers. Right. We are part of the same conversation because we actually have the same goals of making birth safe and joyous. That's been incredibly, incredibly rewarding.
Yeah. 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 And then what's your favorite piece of advice that you would give to an expectant mom or expectant families?
I think that you said it earlier, which is the only thing you can expect is sort of the unexpected, you know, that you, and so to both be, you know, you can have your plans and your wishes and your desires, and to be open that birth might not look like that, but that if you can isolate what's important to you about what you want from birth and talk about that with your providers, you can probably find more satisfaction even in a situation that you didn't expect. So for instance, if I had known anything about C-sections, right? Because I didn't, I would have, I think, been able to tell my providers when they called for the section, or maybe my husband would have been able to, right? Because I was like not in my rational mind. So somebody advocating for me would have been able to say something about, you know, like I'm a very physically modest person. I don't like feeling like totally naked in front of people. Would have been able to say, you know, is there a way in the operating room that we can be sure that, you know, Rachel feels sort of covered? So even somebody who doesn't plan for a C-section, if they know that, for instance, is important to them, that could still be part of their birth. So expecting the unexpected and bringing through the through line of like, and still what's important to me to have happen or ways you want, I would like to be cared for.
Excellent. Excellent advice. So where can people find you? Where can people find your book?
So my website is rachelsummerstein.com. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter sometimes. And the book, you can order it from Amazon or bookshop.org or Barnes & Noble we're a local bookshop.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. I really, really appreciate it. I know folks are going to find it useful.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Wasn't that a great conversation? I really appreciate Rachel coming on, and I admire how she took her story and turned it into a great book. You definitely want to go pick up your copy of Invisible Labor and read it. It's a really great read. Okay, now after every conversation, when I have a guest on, I do something called Dr. Nicole's Notes, where I talk about my top takeaways from the conversation. Here are my Dr. Nicole's notes for my conversation with Rachel. Number one, you have to prepare for all possible outcomes during birth, including cesarean birth. Rachel didn't prepare for the possibility of cesarean birth, and that ended up not being good in how she was able to manage the overall experience. You have to understand that C-section is possible. We certainly overuse C-section in our medical system. I 1000% acknowledge that, and we have to work to decrease the number of medically unnecessary cesarean births. But sometimes C-section is going to be medically necessary, and it may be possible for you. And sometimes you can't know that until you get into the birth experience. Actually, most of the time, you won't know that until you get into your birth experience. So you need to understand that C-section is possible, and you need to know things like the right questions to ask in order to understand if it's really medically necessary and what your options are. That's something that I teach inside the birth preparation course, my online childbirth education class. You can check out the birth preparation course at drnicolerankins.com/enroll. But really, any good childbirth education class is going to teach you, and there are other options out there, is going to teach you about being prepared for that possibility and those questions to ask so you don't feel quite so blindsided if it comes to that. The second thing that I want to say is that there is so much more to birth than just the mother and baby making it out physically alive. So much of our system is you should just be happy that you have a healthy baby. And that is so dismissive of the psychological and mental health that happens with having a baby too, right? So it's more than just like you're physically there and alive. That's the absolute floor. That's the absolute bottom basement of what we should be able to do. There's certainly something that's incredibly important about feeling good about your birth experience, feeling like you were respected, feeling like you were listened to, feeling like you were treated with compassion. All of those things are incredibly important and help setting the tone for your new journey into motherhood. So it's just not about being physically alive, or you should just be happy that you and your baby are healthy. You know, that's kind of the message that Rachel got when she went to seek malpractice options. You know, no one's going to give you any money because everybody's physically healthy. And it really is more to birth than that. And you should expect more from your birth than that. You deserve more from your birth than that. And then the last thing I want to say is make sure you understand your VBAC options. If you do have a C-section and you want to attempt a VBAC in your next birth, make sure you understand your options, because the options are not equal for everyone. You really want to know that you have a doctor who's not just tolerant of a VBAC, but is actually supportive of you having a VBAC. You want to have someone who is skilled with managing labor. A skilled OB is really important and can help make the difference in your labor and birth experience. You know, in Rachel's case, the second birth, or the OB was able to turn the baby, which was really helpful. You know, her OB worked with midwives, so had some understanding of the importance of midwifery care. So you want to understand your VBAC options and set yourself up for a situation where you have the most supportive environment. Set yourself up for the highest chances of success. And you can learn more about that in episode 229 of the podcast, where I talk about VBAC. That is drnicolerankins.com/episode229. All right. So there you have it. Please share this podcast with a friend. Also subscribe to the podcast wherever you are listening to me right now. You can also leave me an honest review in Apple Podcast. I'd love to hear what you think about the show, and it helps other women to find the show when those reviews are there. You can also let me know what you think about the show on Instagram. I'm on Instagram at Dr. Nicole Rankins. Come follow me there for more great pregnancy and birth information, and my DMs are open. I love to hear from you. That's it for this episode. Do come on back next week, and remember that you deserve a beautiful pregnancy and birth.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.